Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, December 19th, a little after 9 p.m. Eastern. There are all kinds of great basketball games on tonight, so we're going to try to squeeze in a quick Hoops HD report here. One of the worst days of college basketball schedule I've seen in a long time.
This has been the worst day since the first day of the season.
Well, fortunately, you're in the puppet bunker, so it's all good.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by David Dorman and John Tytel. Right below me, Joby Fortson. To his sides, John Salica and David Griggs. We've got a fair amount to get to here, of action, especially what happened over the weekend. Before we even get to that, though, I kind of want to go back a week, because right after we did our Hoops HD report last week, I think it was Tuesday or so, that the news came out that Sean Miller is not being suspended or getting any penalty whatsoever for everything that went on over at Arizona. And then a few days after that, Mark Gottfried at Cal State Northridge gets a 4-year show cause for probably doing less than what Miller was accused of. Tytel, let me start with you. You being an Arizona guy, any thoughts on what happened with Miller?
Well, I got to see him up close and personal on Friday when Xavier came to D.C. to destroy the Hoyas. I don't recall him being asked about that at his press conference. I do remember looking at the stats and, like, he's the fifth winningest coach active in the sport. Like, it's Self and Few, and I think Tony Bennett is, like, right below him. Like, he's got a great record, which I don't know if that's a cause or effect of all the chaos that went on in Tucson. I think that if they could prove it, they would have stuck it to him, frankly, to send the message. So I don't know if they just couldn't prove it, or do you think that they just went easy on him?
May I interject?
Griggs, go ahead.
Okay, so the NCAA did not hear this case. It was heard by the IARP, which I think is Independent Accountability Resolution Process. If I think the IARP, essentially a few years ago, the NCAA came up with this independent body of non-staffers that would hear cases. And the idea was, if a school wanted to expedite the process, they could go to them, but whatever they decided stuck. It was a horrible disaster, at least from the NCAA's point of view, because it was taken even longer than most of the infractions committees and disciplinary committees at the NCAA were taking. And the IARP's rulings were very inconsistent with how the NCAA was ruling. So the NCAA basically announced at the beginning of this year that they were disbanding it. There were still six cases before it. One was Louisville's, the other was Sean Miller's. And they were going to basically resolve the rest of those six. And once those six are over, it's done. They have taken a long time, but in each and every case, they've done almost nothing. So I have to believe that had the infractions committee heard this case, it would have been a very different ruling.
Well, and that's the thing about taking it easy on Miller, because you can't prove a case. Be given that it's binding and you can't appeal it.
Yeah, you cannot.
They didn't have to prove any case after that point. And Salica, right. Sean Miller is at your school now. I guess you're happy about the decision, right?
One of the rumors we initially heard was that it was going to be two games that would have been in Big East play. Now, granted, one of those games would have been against Georgetown, so Seton Hall would have been the only notable one that they missed right here. But I've teased this before. Back in March, when they were going through the interview process, keep in mind that Xavier AD Greg Christopher, he was actually on the committee for infractions, so he would have had he would have had an intimate idea of just how the process would have worked. I'm sure they would have vetted Sean Miller when they found out that he was going to be available. So once they fired Travis Steele, it was pretty obvious who they were going after. They had to do their homework. So this was obviously the best case scenario for Miller and Xavier fans, for that matter.
Okay, but can we agree that the IARP was just kind of almost a hilariously amusing disaster? In general, not just with the Xavier case. And honestly, I kind of like that everything that happened is irritating the NCAA.
Well, let's see what happens to the Kansas case, but I'm sure they're going to get off light now.
They're not going to do anything. They haven't done anything. Like
we need to move on here. We're going to be a 3-hour show, and there's not even any games this week.
How come the IRP can't ever hear any of my cases, Chad?
Let's go into the games that were played. And I want to start tonight in the SEC. And Joby, let me start with you here, because according to Kentucky fans, this season is a complete and total disaster. The team sucks. Cal should be fired. Why? Because you lost a game to UCLA, one of the best teams of the nation.
I mean, Kentucky's fine. I mean, this is not going to be the Kentucky team, you know, that went undefeated. Sorry. Yeah. Until the Final Four. Sorry. We're not having that this year, but this is not Billy Gillespie leading your team. I mean, this is a solid team actually for Kentucky. They're going to make the tournament. They may or may not be a protected seed, but the SEC has been strong enough where if Kentucky, like they often do, catch fire, and once all the pieces start to come together, because that's how Cal runs his program, he wants it to peak in the late in the regular season, and they're going to get wins. You know, as long as they play solid in the SEC, they're going to get solid wins because the SEC has a lot of those available.
Yeah, I just don't get why Kentucky fans are in total panic mode, but they are, as is typical with them, I think, every year.
Yeah.
But Dorman, let me ask you about the other team I have up on the screen here on the right. Yeah. The undefeated Mississippi State Bulldogs, fresh off of a thrilling win over Nicholls at home, in which they turned the ball over and gave Nicholls a wide open three to win it that they missed, and a wide open rebound to tie it that they missed as well. They are undefeated. That's got to mean something, right?
Chris Jans just doing a fantastic, fabulous job at Mississippi State. When you hire guys at the under the radar level, you just don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes they can bring it right with them and they step in and they get it and you win. And sometimes it just, for some reason, it doesn't work. This was the perfect hire, moving on from Howland, going with Chris Jans. They have taken his philosophy, put it in play, and the schedule, it wasn't great, and there's a lot of Tier 4 wins, but Chris Jans is doing a fantastic job. This Mississippi State team is real. If you go 500 in conference, Mississippi State's in the tournament.
Yeah, and they got, I mean, you still have the Drake game left. The Marquette, the Utah wins are nice. You get TCU and the SEC Big 12 Challenge also.
Yeah, I thought the Drake game was going to look good, but Drake hasn't decided to play basketball yet, but knock them off. And I agree with you. Go 500 in the conference and you're good.
Yeah, and they have just blown up the Southland in the SWAC. I mean, ooh, man, they're kind of
messing around. Hey, Nicholls did win their game up. They were up 50 at half today. So, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm glad to hear they held on to that one.
Tytel, I brought them up
speaking
last week.
Speaking of ripping up Tier 4.
Ripping up Tier 4. What about the LSU Tigers, Tytel?
So I thought Coach Matt McMahon was just going to be a Band-Aid after the whole Will Wade WTF season they had last year. But he went 31-3 at Murray State last year. He's now 10-1. His only loss this year, 2 points neutral site to a Kansas State team that's 10-1 in the Cayman Islands last month. They get a home cupcake this week. Then they host a one-loss Arkansas team to start conference play. So we're going to find out very quickly if they are a paper tiger or not. And the key has been another Murray State guy, 6'10 transfer KJ Williams. Somehow, moving from the OVC to the SEC, his stats have gone up. 19 points a game, shooting 80% from the line, and a 6'10 guy, he's shooting 49% behind the arc. It's unbelievable.
I understand their only loss is a pretty decent K-State team, but where is their win? I'm looking for it.
They have as many top 100 wins as Mississippi Valley. I mean, that is a good point.
They beat a Wake team that actually was up 20 on him and should have beat him in Baton Rouge, but that's beside the point.
It's a bad Wake team. Come on, Rutgers.
It is. It might be an NIT Wake team, but it's not a tournament team, that's for sure.
Stalika, what about when we look at the rest of this conference here? I think the other notable game, maybe a notable loss, was Auburn's loss to USC this weekend.
And Auburn on Sunday, they actually went out to the West Coast to play USC. They were, I think, up 2 at halftime. USC did end up coming back in that one. That was a pretty close affair throughout. Other than that, I mean, we've seen what happened to Missouri when they went up against Kansas. Now, Arkansas, they've managed to stay the course at 10-1 despite their loss to Creighton, who was healthy at the time.
I've overlooked, of course, the other big game was the Gonzaga-Alabama game.
It was a great game. I figured you were getting to that when we got to Gonzaga.
We can put that one off. We could also put off the Georgia-Notre Dame game until we get to the ACC because that says a lot about Notre Dame and not a lot about Georgia. Yeah. Dorman, here's the upcoming schedule this week. Somewhat of a late week, but I guess a couple interesting games at least, or maybe one interesting game, Florida-Oklahoma.
That's the one I was going to point to. Yeah. I'm sorry. Tuesday, Florida versus Oklahoma. Someone's got to get it going, and this will be their jump start because, as far as I understand, someone's going to have to win the game. So this is the Michael Jordan Classic. It's going on in Charlotte, but someone needs to jump start their season, and it's got to start Tuesday night. After that, they'll get into conference play. So the winner should have a little momentum and maybe can get their season going because so far they've played very flat, both these teams.
I think you've got to also circle Thursday, the bragging rights game.
The bragging rights game. And one more, Auburn going to Washington. That is a little – I mean, Auburn's done a lot. They haven't done a lot in true road games. They just lost one at USC. That's a game that a protected seed should win, but that might not be easy to win. Can they hold serve in that game? I've kind of got my eyes on that one, too.
Okay. Yeah, Washington's not been good this year either so far. Let's jump over to the ACC. And Joby, this is your conference, and I think we got to talk about what your Virginia team did at home against Houston.
Well, I mean, Beekman wasn't 100%, but that's still Houston. What I saw in that game is Houston's stud defensive team, and The McDonald's All-American freshman just hit everything. I mean, it was just an amazing effort. If he does that all year, if that is something he does all year, Houston is going to be cutting down the nets in the Final Four, right? Because that was just awesome. It really was more of a let's praise Houston. UVA took their first loss. We'll see how it goes, later in the season. But I didn't leave that game in a panic mode. I'm not a Kentucky fan. I didn't leave that game in a panic. I said, this is a good Houston team. And, wow, Kelvin Sampson, and we'll talk more about when we get to the American, but that defensive strategy they have bought awesome. In, and it is just great to look at. If you wanted to see good defense and with good offense, because the game's in the 60s, not in the 40s, if you want to see two really good defensive teams – and how good coaching impacts, that was the game to watch.
I got to apologize. First of all, I pulled the screen share there down for a moment. Some of the metrics were a bit off on the screen. I got those updated real quick here. Virginia number 6 in the nation not number 2. And the SEC numbers were a bit off earlier. But
Chad, do you think you could possibly mess anything else up tonight?
I'm carrying this over from last week's under the radar.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
Tytel. How about a team that's way down there on the number 14 on the list, but 10-3 overall in the top 50 net, the NC State team?
Their net is higher than the best team in the top team in the conference. I just want to point that out. And since Chad questioned the LSU schedule, as he should, let's investigate this 10-3 record. So we got three losses, all by single digits to Kansas, Pitt, and Miami. Four top 100 wins over Dayton, Butler, Furman, Vandy, all solid. And a great three-guard lineup, Terquavion Smith, Jarkel Joyner, Casey Morsell, one of Joby's old friends, each scoring over 13 points a game, which is even more important because their big man from Serbia, 6'11", Dusan Mihorcic, has missed the past three games with a right knee injury. But they host Louisville on Thursday. Chad, are we allowed to consider that a cupcake this year when you host Louisville?
Yes.
That is a bye game, absolutely, right? how much does Louisville get paid to play that game?
Louisville's on a roll. They won two in a row. Yeah, they took care of business against Florida A&M.
Miami is still underrated. No one wants to talk about the Hurricanes.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the Hurricanes.
Let's talk Hurricanes first before I go where I was going to go. Yeah. Dorman, how about the Hurricanes here at this 11-1 record with you know, four quad one and quad two wins?
Fantastic. Larrañaga's doing a great job. The only losses we see there is to a solid Maryland squad. This will show us a lot coming up later in the week. It might even be tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night is the big one.
Tomorrow night. There we go, Joby, the big one. Virginia's coming to Coral Gables. Can Virginia bounce back against with the loss to Houston? I'm with Joby. Was not a bad loss. Fantastic. I thought Virginia looked good. But Miami is going to be ready. The place will be jumping, I think. There's a few games every year they get excited about down there. Miami's off to a fantastic start. Let's see if they can hold serve at home against Virginia.
And Stalika, for all that everyone was ready to write off North Carolina, you know, after the four losses early on in the season, they go in the CBS Sports Classic. They beat Ohio State this weekend.
Keep in mind, with about 2 seconds left in that one, we were ready to write off the Tar Heels again after they gave up what should have been the game winner, but they managed to advance the ball to half court, get a timeout, and then get a good pass inbounds, get the game tying shot that will send it to overtime. And as Tytel is pointing out in chat, Pete Nance was the one that got the Heels into overtime, and then they were able to outlast the Buckeyes. So definitely a bit of a season salvager right here.
And I tell you, I've been critical of Hubert Davis somewhat, despite what they did last year in the tournament. I think it was the absolute perfect move that more coaches need to do. When you have 2 seconds left, you've got a timeout, throw the ball to half court, call that time up and out and set up a play. You know, without a timeout, I don't think they had enough time to win that, to tie that game. With the timeout, they did. Because unlike the NBA, Griggs, as we know, you don't get to magically advance the ball just by calling timeout.
I kind of wish we'd get rid of live ball timeouts in general. But their next two, if we can just their next one against Michigan, I think is a really big game for both teams, but particularly North Carolina. It has a pivotal feel to it. But you start to look at this resume. The win against Ohio State is better than anything they had last year all the way up until March. So while the resume could certainly be better, it hardly stinks. And they had some good showings. You know, it's tough to win at Virginia Tech. It's tough to win at Indiana. They took Alabama to the wall. At this point,
four overtime wall.
Yeah. I think this team looks better now than they did at any point last season until the end of the regular season. So for what it's, that's not the same as saying I think they'll go all the way back to the Final Four, but they're better now than they were a year ago at this time.
Okay. That's fair. You know, I guess we also got to give one shout out here to the pathetically bad Louisville Cardinals, who found a way to put together a 2-game winning streak.
Do we give them a shout out or do we shame Western Kentucky for? Oh, excuse me. Let's go ahead.
Well, I also want to point out
winning streak.
One thing for our viewers, when they look at the conference and the sheet that Chad has up there, when you compared it to the SEC, look at the net ratings because that's what matters. You are seeing only half the conference in the top 100. That is a big warning sign for later in the year. Now go to the SEC, despite the SEC losing a ton of games last week. The SEC, look at that. Only three teams not in the top 100. SEC teams will be picking up quality wins in conference play when the ACC will be like, oh, good win at home against Syracuse. Well, not really. Yeah, that's going to have a huge impact and could lead to a similar seed issue that happened last year. If you remember the ACC teams, when you compare their performance in the tournament, every single one of them outperformed their seed of where they were seeded because the net was poor out of conference. We're seeing a repeat this year.
And there we've got the upcoming schedule. The big one, obviously, is the Duke at Miami game. Also, we mentioned the North Carolina-Michigan game. Not too much else this week. Again,
yeah, but Notre Dame-Florida State was the big game.
Yeah, it wasn't football
30 back years in ago.
Football, yes. Yeah, okay. Let's go to the Big Ten Conference and where we have Dorman, we have the number one team in the nation, both polls number one, not getting all the number one votes. We'll get to UConn in a little bit here, but Purdue continues to win, picked up a hard-fought win over Davidson this weekend.
Yeah, that's a solid Davidson team. It's a solid win. It was in Indianapolis where the Pacers play. They didn't blow them out, but Davidson stuck in there, played well, but Purdue is too much in the end. Down low, they're dominant. Zach Edey and the guard play has been fantastic. I love their low, their perimeter defense. I love their down low defense. Everything about this, Matt Painter has done a fantastic job. Purdue is a legitimate national title contender.
And the other team that just continues to surprise here, Joby, the Wisconsin Badgers, 9-2 overall, up to number 17 in the polls this week.
Yeah, the Badgers are better than I think any of us thought they'd be at this stage. Yeah, I see them right now definitely in the top half of the field as we speak, and verging on the edge of a protected seed. They already have three wins that are tournament quality wins with Maryland, Marquette, and Iowa. This team is going to be dancing, and it's going to be a very tough team and a tough out, as it always is. Once again, I talked about how much I love the defense in the Houston Virginia game. Well, throw Wisconsin in there if you like good defense as well. Of course, don't have them play Virginia, then that pace, that tempo, 340 versus 350 something might scare away a lot of the viewership.
Yeah, they were one of my dark horses.
Tytel, the Fighting Illini up there on the right, I know you want to discuss them because you were thrilled with that Alabama A&M win this week, right?
I mean, it's been a roller coaster of months. They lost at Maryland, Dorman's favorite team in the country. They had the neutral site overtime win over Texas, which is fantastic. Then the home loss to Penn State before beating Alabama A&M. So, like, they're heading to St. Louis Thursday for the bragging rights game with Missouri. One thing they're not bragging about at all is their 65% shooting from the free throw line. They do have nice depth, though. Terrence Shannon leading the way with 18 points a game. Then he's got, like, six guys behind him who are all averaging 8 to 10 points. And it's a nice mix of size and veterans and young guys. So Brad Underwood can plug in anybody he wants because he's got so much depth. Also, nice defense. Six blocks a game is number six in the nation.
Great. I love this other team you just pulled
up. Is it time to start talking about Chris Collins's team?
Yeah,
we were ready to fire him at the start of the season.
I think it has been ever since they won at Michigan State. When you look at their wins, the neutral floor win against Liberty is they do have the one road win at Georgetown. Other than that, it's kind of unimpressive. But I will point to this DePaul game. Not that DePaul is spectacular, but they blew DePaul out like a top 25 team would blow out DePaul, and maybe even more so. So, same with Georgetown winning by double digits on the road, winning by double digits against Liberty. So they're looking, they are holding serve and controlling the games that you would expect a top 40-ish tournament caliber team to control. And they got the one big win against Michigan State. The one that is kind of a head scratcher was that blowout loss to Pitt, but they were right in there with Auburn. They're going back to the bakery. They got UIC and Brown coming up, but I think they're going to be really hard to beat at home. And if they can get a few more road wins, yeah, they're inside the bubble.
I'll tell you, the win at DePaul was so dominating that DePaul's AD actually took to Twitter after the game to apologize to the fans for how bad the team was playing. That's how.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was not aware of that.
Yes. Stalika, do you want to talk a little bit about Indiana here off of the blowout loss to Kansas?
Well, I think we can safely say Indiana is not going to be one of the elite teams this year. They should still be a solid team right here. Granted, not too many teams are going to put up a good showing at Kansas, but by the same token, not everyone's going to get blown out by 22 against the Jayhawks either.
Yeah, and Joby, I want to go back to what you were mentioning before about the ACC versus the SEC. Mm-hmm. Look at these Nets in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
There's only one of them that's not top 86 of the nation.
Yeah, and I'm just confused. I'm not going to lie, as the math guy, I'm very confused why. I mean, the ACC won the Big Ten battle. If you compare records, The records are similar. Why are the Nets so wackily different? I don't know. But
I think it's just collectively they've scheduled better teams.
Right. MIAC, I guess, was more Mac than MIAC, you know.
Yeah.
I think the matchups lined up really well for the ACC and the Big Ten Challenge. It leaned their way. They did the Big Ten's top teams. Yeah, it just didn't line up well for the Big Ten, but they are.
Big Ten would have wanted Northwestern beating Pitt.
I know. I agree with you. You're right. That was the one game Northwestern didn't show this year. I agree. Yeah. Northwestern's solid, playing good.
Well, and Pitt beat NC State, who we just praised. So who knows? Maybe Pitt's better than we think. I don't know.
Here's the schedule for the week. And other than that, Michigan, North Carolina, and Illinois, Missouri games we already mentioned, just don't bother with Big Ten basketball this week. There's nothing's going to be done this week to help any of these Nets, but they'll change.
Bucknell to the rack.
Yeah, Bucknell to the rack. Rutgers better win that game.
Grambling's that'll actually help some of the metrics. They're going to win a lot of games in the SWAC. That's how you schedule. You schedule good teams that you can easily beat.
Yeah. Let's go to the number two team in the nation, team that got a lot of votes, was actually number one in the net, number one in KenPom, number one in SAG, number one in strength of record. Griggs, this UConn team, and I hate to say it because of our good friend Zach, who's a UConn alum. And
yes, I hate to say it.
But
as
this,
well.
I think this may actually be the best team in the nation, even if they are number two right now.
Yeah. Well, let's pull them up if we can, because I hate to say it as well. Our good friend Zach Singer, a major UConn fan, a Hoops HD alum, and you can kind of tell that this is all a mirage. Like the wins that they have in Tier One, not that impressive.
The win at Butler is really not.
Yeah,
it's a little borderline. But
Long Island, they were without one of their key players, and maybe they could. Had Long Island had better players, they probably don't get blown out by nearly as much. So you have to take things like that into account. Let's not just praise UConn.
What's funny is I like a lot of those Tier Two wins sitting there.
Oh yeah,
totally.
I mean. Oregon is getting better and better, and we'll get to them in the Pac-12. But I mean, that's a nice resume, and we all know that master.
It's very good.
There,
I don't think UConn runs the table in the Big East, but I will say this: in looking at every game they have remaining, I don't think I would pick them to lose an individual game. It's just if you ask me, will they win all 20 of them? My answer is probably not. They might lose one or two.
But
let's see if they get tripped up.
Being a first team All American right now, I mean, we've got a Final Four contender.
Yes, right now, got national more than the Final Four.
Yes, national title contender, without a doubt.
Let's go to a couple other teams here. Sleeker, your Xavier Musketeers have now run off five wins in a row. As we start really getting to Big East play this week,
I'm sure it's just a coincidence that they've played five games since the Phil Knight. Phil Knight legacy, where they ended up losing to a Duke and Gonzaga. I mean, that is kind of deceptive, though, that they did beat West Virginia, but they are not a top 10 team in the country. If you pull up Xavier and Marquette, I think you're going to see there's a reason why the Golden Eagles are actually in the top 25, whereas the Musketeers are going to be knocking on the door right here. Most years, Florida and Cincinnati on the road are going to be good quality wins, but they're not quite so this year. Baylor, they are more of a legit top 20 team right here. And Creighton, even though they're a little bit down, that's still a good win for Marquette.
Yeah, there's the Marquette profile there on the left. Tytel, I know that the theme of the day for you seems to be teams with great records and bad strength of schedule. So how about St. John's Red Storm?
The theme is teams named John, Chad.
All right.
They beat Florida State by double digits last Saturday. They're 11-1. Their only loss is a Tier 1 loss on the road. Let's give them a little credit. Not a ton, but a little credit. They head to Villanova Wednesday. They're probably going to lose, but we'll see. Senior big man Joel Soriano, he's playing like an All-American still. 15 points, 13 boards a game, shooting 60% from the field. The guy's unstoppable down in the paint. And they're hitting the boards. It's not just him. The team is averaging 43 boards a game, number 5 in the country, which helps a lot because their three-point shooting of 31% a game is like 305th in the country. The only reason it's not worse, of course, Rutgers transfer Montez Mathis. He's 10 of 22 from behind the arc this year. Thank you so much for lending him out to St. John's, Chad.
Yeah. We're okay in that position right now. But Dorman, 6 games into the season, Creighton was 6-0. They were preseason, I think, like a top one of the top teams in the nation. Everyone was singing their praises. They're now 6-6.
I was one of the ones singing the praises. I was one of the ones that had them in the top 10 to start the season. I'm really stunned by what happened. The four tier one losses, all explainable. But if you look down, BYU and Nebraska, it's almost unexplainable. Creighton has such offensive firepower, but they can't stop anyone. They're having trouble stopping anyone. And they went and then Madison Square Garden the other day, they couldn't hit a shot. So they started out cold. I think Greg McDermott will get the train back on the rails here. I really do. The Butler, DePaul, Seton Hall, three at home. Start by winning each one at home. Get three wins right there, then see what you can do. Then you got a crazy tough road trip. But if you can win those Butler, DePaul, Seton Hall games at home, you've steadied the ship. Going forward, you're safe. Let's see what you can do.
Yeah, I was also very praiseworthy of Creighton. I'm normally not, because I normally say that, like, once you get to February, this team folds. So I take full responsibility. It was because I was praising them that they are now having
trouble. That's also a pretty mitigating factor going on for Creighton right now. Brian Kalkbrenner has missed their last three games due to illness.
Yes.
You can't lose to Nebraska and BYU even without him. That's
Chad, pull up Creighton real quick, because there's a statistical thing that should be pointed out for him. Look at the KenPom component. Those are great. Adjusted O, adjusted D.
Yeah.
And if you think they're going to turn around, look at the luck.
Explain the luck component very quickly.
The luck component basically is your projected record where it should be right now based on the offensive defense of where it actually is. So an unlucky team is a team that should be 14-2 and is 6-6. A lucky team is a team that is 14-2 but should, or 12-2. And you know, I don't think.
And so, if you are right on there, but, yeah. Creighton will turn this around.
18 versus bandwagon. 12, whatever.
This is 10-2. That's your metric to look at if you are a believer they will turn it around. And that's why I'm still in that camp.
Here's the upcoming schedule. Some games here coming up on Tuesday night. Butler at Creighton on Thursday, and Christmas Day. In addition to the Diamond Head, we have a special on Fox Christmas Day afternoon. Griggs, DePaul at Creighton. This is the game the entire nation will be watching for some reason.
DePaul and Creighton and the Diamond Head. It's just
I haven't figured out why they scheduled that game there.
But yeah, the day is just getting even better. I agree. Like, how much do you have to dislike someone to give them a basketball ticket to see DePaul play? Like, how insulting is that?
Let's go over to the Big 12 conference here.
Every DePaul fan just unfollowed me, by the way.
And how about this, Dorman? The conference had an absolutely perfect record this week. Every single team won every game they played, including the Kansas Jayhawks, who are now number 4 in the nation, with that very impressive win over Indiana.
Really impressive. They took care of business. Indiana was never really a threat to win that game. And they keep rolling along. Big Self, I am not his biggest fan, but all he does is win. This team has talent all over the court. Everyone thought they lost too much. This was going to be a down year for Bill Self and the Jayhawks. The only slip up they've had is to a Tennessee team that I think is very good and very dangerous. After Harvard, here comes their conference play. They'll start off with Oklahoma State. I'm excited for the Baylor games. I don't see many teams in this conference that's going to beat this Kansas team. And I'm not even that high on them, but I just don't see where the losses are coming. It'll be interesting when they go to Rupp at the end of January. But Kansas is great. Great again.
And Tytel, over on the right side there, I've got the TCU Horned Frogs continuing on your theme with teams with bad strengths of schedule for the night here.
Well, so this is also a bit of following on Stalica when he talked about how Creighton's doing without Kalkbrenner. TCU is the perfect example of how injuries can impact a team's seed in March. When Mike Miles plays, they're 7-0. Their only loss of the season without him, 1 point at home to Northwestern State. when he's healthy, they are great, and the committee will take that into account. And they're getting it done, not just with him, but on defense, especially on the perimeter. They only allow 5 threes a game, number 11 in the nation. Very tough game. Utah in Salt Lake City Wednesday, home cupcake the following Wednesday. Then they host Texas Tech on New Year's Eve to start conference play. Hopefully they can get Eddie Lampkin back as well. We mentioned Miles, he's been out. Lampkin missed the last game with a minor back injury, and I assure you there is no such thing as a minor back injury.
Yeah. Joby, Texas Longhorns, despite everything with Chris Beard, have won 3 straight games and are number 7 in the nation.
Yeah, no,
they've sweated on all three.
They are – I think without Beard, they are not nearly as good a team. Yes, I know they
won. Agree. The
game, but this is – I'm not saying they crater and miss the tournament. But whereas I had the faith I expressed in our Big East segment on Creighton, I don't have the faith for the Horns long term, except for the fact they have the talent. But I don't think it's a plug and play. I think Chris Beard is an integral part of that. And so without Chris Beard, you're going to see results on the court. You're going to see them be more of a 500 team in the Big 12. Whereas you were talking, you know, who's going to challenge Kansas? With Beard, it would have been Texas.
Yeah,
I agree.
Me too.
Well, is who's going to challenge Texas? Then maybe West Virginia? Griggs, if you want to answer that, go ahead.
No, I think West Virginia is good. I don't think they're Kansas good, and I don't think that they can run through this gauntlet. I don't think anybody can other than perhaps Kansas. Kansas might. They're just going to break away from the pack. It's one national Final Four / national title team, and then maybe a bunch of 5 or 6 that can get into the top half of the bracket but aren't as good as Kansas. That's kind of how I see it.
Well, then let's just quickly go. This is the upcoming schedule, the big game being Baylor's the TCU Utah game and the Oklahoma Florida games. We both discussed those earlier. But Dorman, let me turn to you and jump over to the Pac-12 here. Being led by one of your favorite teams, I know, Arizona State, 11-1 now, broke the top 25 in the AP poll this week.
I love Bobby Hurley.
Really? I hope you are you being serious, sir?
No, I'm not. Okay. But I had him in real big trouble with his job coming into the season, and he has just proved me wrong. The Creighton win is a good win, and it's going to look better as the season goes. The Colorado on the road is good. Interesting game later this week in San Francisco. I believe it's a true road game. That'll be interesting. Let's see if Arizona State can do exactly what they've been doing, hitting big shots, and see if they can knock off San Francisco, because the next game, home to Arizona, you know they will be buried.
Yeah, and Tytel, Arizona had one of the biggest wins of this week with the win over Tennessee Saturday night.
Wouldn't know. It started at 10:30 Eastern, Chad, but they did trail late in the first half by 7. They did get the win after losing in Tennessee last year, so they're 10-1. Good news, 24 of 27 from the free throw line. Bad news, no bench scoring, as in 0 points from any of the non-starters. They do have a pair of home cupcakes before heading to Tempe. We could have a 12-1 Wildcat team and a 12-1 Sun Devil team. Would be amazing. And Rocco's favorite Swedish player, Pelle Larsson, tied his career high, 17 points against Tennessee, 9 of 9 from the free throw line, or as they say in Sweden, from the free cast linea.
Okay.
What time does that tip off, that Arizona State Arizona game?
Not 10:30 Eastern, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I believe it's 8:30 Eastern for TV.
I hear they're having a big viewing party for it in New York City at Times Square.
Yeah.
They're going to put it up on like the Jumbotron there.
Joby, can you figure out the Utah Utes for me? Blow out Arizona, lose to BYU.
I think the Arizona game's a fluke. They got them at home. That's where it comes down to. I'm starting to believe Arizona State, because, you know, the only loss they had was a Florida-esque loss to Texas Southern. It seems like Texas Southern does it every year. On the other hand, Utah, come on. I mean, winning in Pullman actually isn't, you know, is deserved. But it's not even the Sam Houston, because Sam Houston's a decent team. But BYU is just not. And it's not like, oh, that's a strange place for me to play. Okay. Yeah,
it's a hard place to play.
I know, civil, you know, holy war, blah, 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 blah. But
it's not, pretty wild.
Team's not that good. They're really not.
We're being told it's a 2 p.m. Eastern start for that Arizona State game. Even better for
let's put it this way. You barely beat Georgia Tech. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, they did.
They did.
Yeah, and there's some pretty good teams in the state of Georgia, but none play basketball.
Washington State was in the game, even all game against Baylor late last night. They stuck around. They hung around. Washington State might win some games in this conference. I know they're off to a bad 0-2 start, but I believe they'll pick up some wins in this conference, finish right in the middle there.
Well, Cal did move out of the 363rd spot in the JNG, and now poor Elon is 363 and Cal's 362.
But Elon has a lot better chance of winning games this season than Cal does.
Yeah. Well, it's Santa Clara. It was the strength of schedule of Santa Clara that pulled him out. They lost.
There's actually, that's not Cal. That's Cal State Bakersfield. Let's get Cal up here. Just real quick, big game coming up this week, Cal. Their home game against Texas Arlington, their most winnable game left of the on the season. So
yeah, I don't think
they winless win versus Texas Arlington has not won a D1 game yet. So
yeah, and that creates a huge dilemma. I just don't think it can be done in the Pac-12. There's not a good enough really bad losses to be had. But if anyone's going to go for the double, the Stallings and the Centenary,
Stalika. USC has run off 5 wins in a row, kind of quietly, up until the win against Auburn this week.
And we've already touched on the Auburn win right here, and unlike Utah, they do have a win here against BYU. Other than that, though, their biggest win is against Long Beach State. Not too many wins in the top two tiers yet for the Trojans.
But you know, are they doing what they need to be? What needs to be done to get back after that rough start and the Gulf Coast loss and all that?
Well, they did about all they could, considering they passed up their chances for wins against Tennessee and Wisconsin down in Atlanta.
Played well in those games, though. Yeah, pull up their schedule again, Chad. Like, there's
beat Auburn last night.
Yeah, coming up, there's enough. Like, none of those are wins that would actually, like, it land in quad one. But the next 5 games are away from home. UCLA is probably out of their league. But if they can win the other 4, I would call that doing pretty damn well.
And UCLA is a pretty darn good team. Run left there. We discussed them earlier in the show, talking about the
Think they win that
win over Kentucky.
Yeah.
But yeah, this UCLA team, you know, up to number 9 in the coaches poll this week. In fact,
yeah.
There is the upcoming schedule for this week. We see mostly some bye games, although that USC Colorado State, the TCU Utah games are somewhat interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Washington State is going to be out in the Diamond Head.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in UCLA. I like them in Arizona to get protected seeds, maybe even contend for 1 seeds. UCLA's only losses were to 2 top 10 teams, and based on what they've done in their last 2 games, how can you not like that? Like, that's impressive.
Let's go out. Let's stay out west here, actually, in the West Coast Conference. And Joby, Gonzaga got the Alabama win. I think that's the win they needed to say, hey, you know, this team really is the Gonzaga that we see every year, is it not?
Yeah, no, they got – and as David Griggs will often say, you need to have a win like that against fellow protected seeds, and Alabama most certainly is one right now. And so I could see conceivably Gonzaga now run the table the rest of the season, without a doubt. If they do that, they are a 1 seed. But their 3 losses they have to date, if they lose 1, 2, 3 games, it probably costs them that 1 seed line. But you know what? They're destined for. I'll be shocked if they aren't a protected seed. I'll be shocked actually if they're not a 2 seed or higher.
They got the 2 St. Mary's games left. They also got to play Santa Clara on the road here coming up on January 7th. Titel, I think you wanted to talk a little about the Broncos, yes?
I mean, I thought we had a rule that you can write off a team when they have a double-digit home loss to Tim Miles, but apparently the Broncos never got that memo because they've righted the ship and won 3 in a row to get to 11-3. They wrap up non-conference play on Thursday with one of their toughest opponents of the year in Boise State squad that's won 8 in a row. Then they ease into conference play, back-to-back home games against San Fran and St. Mary's. They do have one of the best transfers in the country in Brandon Pajemski. He had a total of 22 points for Illinois last year. Now he's averaging 18 points a game, plus 9 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals a game. He can really give Drew Timmy some serious competition for WCC Player of the Year, which sounds ridiculous, but his stats back it up.
Yeah. Other than St. Mary's and Gonzaga, maybe Santa Clara or San Francisco, I don't know. There's too much more to discuss in this conference. I wanted to keep things moving along a little bit. Here's the upcoming schedule, though, real quick. I don't know that there's – I guess the Arizona State San Francisco game Wednesday night is the game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Weber State BYU is a little bit of beehive action there. I do want to
touch on San Francisco briefly, though. Okay. They did knock UNLV from the ranks of the unbeaten.
Yes,
fans in Las Vegas were partying on Sunday for some reason. I don't get it.
Too soon.
Let's actually continue out west here. One more conference, the Mountain West Conference.
That's the Big 12, Chen.
Yes, it is the Big 12. Let's find the Mountain West Conference.
I mean, that's a hell of a Mountain West.
How about the Mountain West Conference, which actually has 2 undefeated teams, which the Big 12 does not have. No other conference in the nation has 2 undefeated teams. There's only 5 of them left in the country.
Yeah, let's pull them both up.
And neither one cracking the top 25, they and both of them and San Diego State all got votes. I think, Tytel, why don't we start with New Mexico here with the big father versus son battle goes to the son.
The Patino non-border war, as I like to call it. They improved to 11-0 when Richard beat Rick, and they get a home cupcake Tuesday. Then they host Colorado State next week to open conference play. If the basketball gods have anything to say about it, please, gods, you should circle February 1st on your calendar. We could have a 21-0 Lobos team against a 20-0 Utah State team in the Mountain West game of the century. Their offense, three-headed monster. Morris Udeze, Jalen House, Jamal Mashburn Jr., each 16 to 18 points a game. Great offense, but a key to the winning streak, their ability to knock down free throws. It sounds simple. They make 20 free throws a game, number one in the nation.
You know, the funny thing is here, the person that could ruin that for happening is Patino's father, Rick, as when Utah State plays Iona in the potential semifinal game in the Diamond Head this weekend. So,
yeah. But look at
these. State may also have a thing or two to say about that.
Yeah. Look at these profiles, particularly New Mexico, because not only are they undefeated, I mean, it hasn't all been at the pastry cart. It's really hard to win at St. Mary's. Iona, good team. San Francisco, probably a tournament team, beat them on a neutral floor. Utah State won at San Francisco, beat an LMU team on a neutral floor that is, while not tournament caliber, still pretty hard to beat. So both these teams have done a lot and looked really good and won decisively in a lot of games. Why aren't the voters voting for any of these teams?
Because they pay attention to what happens in March.
Oh, come on. Okay.
Dorman, let's not forget about the San Diego State team. Despite 3 losses, they have beaten Ohio State. They won at Stanford.
Beat a good eaters team.
And they beat UC Irvine, yeah.
Come conference time, and it's about to get heated up here, San Diego State is going to remind these teams who's in charge of this conference. Yep. And they know everyone else is talking about these undefeateds and all these other teams ahead of them in the standings right now. But none of them played Arizona and Arkansas and St. Mary's. The schedule was really tough on San Diego State. But when they get to it and this conference play starts to get going, San Diego State will rise to the top, and I'd be stunned if they're not the top one or two teams in this conference.
And when you look at this conference at this point, Joby, you being the numbers guy, how many bids is this conference looking at the moment?
It depends how it plays itself out. I can say that except for San Diego State, they'll all lose their first game. Right now, if the season, quote unquote, season ended today, they have 5 bids right now.
They have 5.
And Nevada's one of the first 4 out. Now I think it will whittle its way down to three or four, depending on how the conference tournament, you know, plays itself out. But they're looking at a lot of bids that will be taken from other conferences and probably give them back by losing a 6-11 game.
How many bids is this conference actually going to get, Tytel, at the end of the day? You've been the bracket.
I'm setting the over-under at three, but I'm taking the under because I think the Aztecs make it, as Dorman said, based on the strength of schedule and the strength of the freaking team. They're great. I don't think New Mexico and Utah State and UNLV are all going to win like 27 games. I think that one of them will be good enough, but I think the others will fall back down to earth.
But here's, here's the thing, the metrics.
I'll take the over.
You said, Chad, the metrics allow for a loss at Colorado State because it'll wind up being, you know, that'll be a tier two loss as of today and maybe tier one by the time it happens. And so these other, the games they lose, unless they stub their toe at 10 miles, it's, they're not going to be that bad of losses. And all of a sudden their metrics, they're going to have a lot of tier one and two wins slash losses because of how the, and to their credit, as we point out with New Mexico's resume and Utah State's resume, they may not be beating power five teams, but they're beating very good WCC teams. And Iona, is a legit, Iona's going to run roughshod in the MAAC.
MAAC,
Liz Joby, I think they'll stub their toes at Wyoming, and that will torpedo their metrics when that happens. Well,
I could see Wyoming's metrics getting a lot better, actually, when EK gets back healthy, too, though, in January. So we'll see about that. Here's the upcoming schedule, a bunch of bye games. Other than Tuesday night, Air Force Northern Colorado, a little front range action there.
Yep.
Colorado State USC Wednesday. Utah State, of course, the Diamond Head, like we mentioned. One more conference here to get to, Stalica. The number three team in the nation off of their win at Virginia is Houston. Despite the Alabama loss, this team is still looking pretty darn good, are they not?
I would say that's a pretty good trade-off where maybe you lose to a top 10, top 15 team at home, but end up beating a top five team on the road. And that was a win that the Cougars and the American, for that matter, desperately needed.
Yeah, they got that. And Dorman, I'm starting to kind of believe in Memphis. Should I be or should I not
be?
I'm in. Okay. If I get burned again, so be it. I'm in. Penny and the boys. They were in the game with Alabama. They put on a great last 2 minutes, actually, and almost nudged their way through the door and got tied. But the win against Auburn, they have some solid wins. They're going to need to really dominate this American. Besides Houston, they can't slip up too many other times because they're mostly bad losses. So don't slip up too many times, Memphis. If you can even stay in the game with Houston, and I think you're safe, and I think you'll get a bid in March.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They don't even play Houston until February 19th for the first time, then March of the last game of the season. Tytel, I got to know who you want to discuss, East Carolina, another team with a wonderful strength of schedule.
I mean, Chad is onto my theme. I'll give him that. So, but I'm a smart guy, but this is one team I cannot figure out. So last month, they get the double-digit neutral site win over Toledo, but then they lose at home to South Carolina State. And then this month, they shoot 44% from the free throw line in a double-digit loss at UNC Wilmington. Then they get nine steals and beat South Carolina. This team could finish third in the conference, or they could literally lose their next 20 in a row. Nothing is off the table. The one thing I do know, their star is sophomore guard Javon Small. He played all of 9 minutes last year. This year, he's up to 35 minutes a game. He's averaging 18 points, 5 boards, 6 assists, shooting almost 90% from the line. They're going to have to rename him Javon Extra Large.
Another team that can make some noise in this league and like probably make a run in the bubble, I still like UCF.
Yeah. They lost the game to Missouri on Saturday, though, Griggs.
They did, and it was at home, and it was one that if you're a tournament team, you probably need to win. I still think they're good.
I think it was technically a neutral court game, but.
It was predominantly UCF.
Yeah.
And remember at the beginning of the season, I never said that I thought SMU would be good. So don't go back and listen.
Here's Stalica. Anything else you're looking at the upcoming schedule this week, or should we just skip this week in this conference?
I'd be looking at Detroit Mercy and Cincinnati, if only to see Antoine Davis, to see how many points he runs up against the Cats.
Yeah, a lot, but not enough to beat them by himself.
He continues to go up that chart here. Those of you that follow this podcast know that we normally have one other conference we discuss. Guess what? We're done for conferences for the day. You want to hear about the Atlantic 10? Tune in Wednesday night for Under the Radar. They have been officially relegated off of the show.
Are we promoting a conference?
No.
Okay.
We're done. Let's go. We're going to go right to final thoughts. In fact, and Tytel, I'm going to start with you while I got the screen share off, in fact.
So mine, on a sad note, is about the gentleman you see there, Lewis Orr. At the Xavier Georgetown game last Friday, I learned that he had passed away from cancer at the relatively young age of 64. He first gained fame at Syracuse in the late 70s as part of the Louie and Bowie show, along with his teammate Roosevelt Bowie. He spent almost a decade in the NBA with the Pacers and the Knicks, then retired, then worked for Pete Gillen at Providence, Jim Boeheim at his alma mater, later was head coach at Siena and Bowling Green, and unfortunately for me, Seton Hall, because he beat my Wildcats in the tournament in 2004. Came to Georgetown 2017, spent 5 years on Patrick Ewing's staff. We send our condolences, of course, to all of his family and friends, and he will be greatly missed by everyone.
Yeah, I remember him on that Seton Hall sideline very well, actually. But it was a shame. That was a real shock to hear so young. Let's keep moving along, though. I'll pull the screen share down here. And Joby, any final thoughts from you?
Yes, I would just like to say that I completely support our actions in regards to relegation. And my exhibit A of that is that the JNG's automatic pick, automatic qualifier from the A-10 is, drumroll, Fordham.
Yep. Joby, I just got to say that was the only reason why I wanted to keep them up here. Because I look forward to the 1 year they're good and they get knocked down.
I look forward to Fordham being discussed Wednesday night.
Conference USA has now passed them, I think, in KenPom ratings. And the conference stand is pretty bad for the A-10 this season. Stalika. Yes.
I do want to add a footnote to what Tytel had said. I think Louie Orr actually started his career as an assistant at Xavier when Gillen was still coaching the Musketeers before eventually joining his staff over at Providence. But I also wanted to go back to Joby and piggyback on his thought. I want to go back to the last time the last two times the Atlantic 10 had only one bid in the NCAA tournament. One was in 2002, where Xavier at least got the double. Granted, they were above
the cut line and actually got a
seven seed and a second round appearance that year. But if you go back to 2005, this is where the A-10 could be headed this year. That was the year George Washington had to win the automatic bid and end up getting a 12 seed. That's as low as the A-10 has done in their conference history that I can recall since they went to the 64 team format.
Again, I think we actually spent more A-10 time than it deserves tonight, though, and we didn't even pull them up on the screen. But, Dorman, how about you? Any other final thoughts?
One of the things I love about college basketball are the different special arenas in the country and the different college towns. And it was great last night to see one of them come back. The Pit in Albuquerque, New Mexico last night was rocking, and that place looked a lot of fun. And it was great. New Mexico has had some down years, but – they are back this year. Patino's done a terrific job. That place was going off the wall. I commend both coaches for getting the game together. And it's just great to see some of the historic programs coming back. The Pit and the Lobos fans, great job last night.
I got to throw one more comment in about the Atlantic 10 going to Under the Radar. Griggs, you'll be happy to know this. Fordham is now eligible for Under the Radar top 10 list this week.
Oh my God, they are.
You have any final thoughts?
Doesn't feel right
to finish the show off.
Wow. I was just going to say, this is our last Under the Radar. I'm sorry. God, this is our last Hoops HD report before Christmas. And I kind of like to, step out of puppet character a little bit this time of year and try and remember what's really important. And what really is important this time of year is the Diamond Head Classic. That's all I got.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. What if not to Paul Creighton, huh?
Not DePaul. That one's worth turning into. Hey, hell, it beats hanging out with the relatives.
Okay. I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of David Dorman, John Titel, Joby Fortson, John Salica, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Have a great holiday, everybody. We will be back Wednesday night, or some of us will be back Wednesday night for the End of the Radar show. For those of that won't, again, happy holidays, everybody. And we will talk to you again real soon.